We're joined by Colonel Mike Pringer. He is the former director of Intelligence Special Operations Command at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. His recent op-ed about veterans' voting rights was printed in newspapers around the state this Veterans Day weekend, including in the Naples Daily News. Colonel Pringer is trying to draw attention to the fact that there are thousands of veterans among the more than 1.6 million Floridians who have lost the right to vote because of past felony convictions. The ACLU of Florida is leading a push right now to place a proposed constitutional amendment on the November 2018 ballot that would restore the voting rights of all who complete their sentences, except for those convicted of murder or a felony sex offense. Colonel Pringer, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can join this conversation, too. What are your thoughts on Florida's policy on voting rights for convicted felons? Maybe you yourself are a vet among the 1.2 million Floridians who have lost that right to vote. Give us a call and tell us about it at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Colonel Pringer, when did you become involved in this issue?
Well, I retired from the Army in 1993 and then sort of by accident got involved with the American Civil Liberties Union, among other things. And I worked on the first workshop that we had to help ex-felons get their voting rights back in about 1998. And we've been holding them ever since. Until the Scott administration, there was some possibility that someone had a reasonable chance of getting their voting rights back. But when Governor Scott came into office, things changed drastically, and the number of people who are getting their voting rights back is about 2,800 plus a few.
Yeah, it's gone down considerably, and we'll get into those numbers a little bit later. But I wanted to ask, do you think that highlighting the issue through the lens of veterans is going to get more attention or support?
Well, I think it highlights one aspect of a widespread problem. Veterans who come back frequently have suffered from PTSD. They have a hard time readjusting to civilian life, and they get in trouble. And if they get convicted, they lose their rights. And our veterans basically serve the country, and they suffer a great deal in terms of personal sacrifice and enter into dangerous places. But their job is to defend the Constitution of the United States, and that includes the right to vote. Unfortunately, the right to vote has become a matter of political process. So if someone is convicted of a felony and they complete all the terms of their sentence, then they have to wait from 5 to 7 years to even apply to get their right to vote back. And that's basically unfair.
Do veterans represent a disproportionate percentage of people that are convicted of felonies?
No, not a disproportionate thing. We don't know exactly how many there are. We know that for the last couple of years, there have been over 3,000 a year. But back in the 70s, when people were confronting what they had to go through in Vietnam, we know that about 25% of the people in prison in that late 70s, mid to late 70s time frame, were in fact veterans.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people still have not had their rights restored. So we think that there are probably tens of thousands veterans out there who need help getting their right to vote back.
So your op-ed points out that Florida is one of only four states in the country that, by their constitutions, mandate this lifetime disenfranchisement. Do you know what the other states are?
Virginia was one of them, and they've just changed. And frankly, I just have had a slip of my mental slip, though I can't tell you the other two. But this became an issue in the gubernatorial campaign in Virginia just recently.
Yeah. So are other states, or the other states, do they seem to be trending towards making some changes?
Well, I don't know, but I will tell you that in 47 states now, and soon to be joined by Virginia and hopefully Florida, people get their voting rights back pretty much automatically.
How far does it?
That's the fair way to go.
When did this get started? When did this policy begin?
Well, this, it got incorporated into the Florida Constitution when the Florida was trying to come back into the Union. And then when they had a constitutional commission back in the 60s, it was maintained. Initially, it was designed to go ahead and prevent blacks from voting. But now it's not a racial issue at all. Right now, about 30% of the people who have lost their right to vote are African Americans. 70% of them are white. They could constitute a broad range of society, people who've gotten in trouble and paid their debt to society, and now they're looking for a second chance. And I think that's basically fair. And frankly, it's the Christian thing to do.
Yeah. So this effort is about a petition drive that the has been put together by the ACLU of Florida and a group called Floridians for a Fair Democracy to get a proposed constitutional amendment on the November 2018 ballot that would restore the voting rights of all who complete their sentences, except for those convicted of murder or a felony sex offense. How many signatures are required to get this ballot to
you
happen?
Need about 780,000. Right now we have something like 560 or 70,000. Signatures in. What we want to do is by the end of the year collect 1 million just to take care of petitions that are not correctly filled out and that are not recognized by the supervisors of elections in the various counties in the state of Florida. But to sign a petition, you have to be a registered voter. And you can get a petition if you'd like to help us by going to the website for Floridians for a Fair Democracy and hitting the button that says sign the petition. You can download it, and for the cost of a stamp, you can fill it out, and it's got a return to Floridians for a Fair Democracy Incorporated, which is actually located in Clearwater. And you can get that done very easily, and you can help us, you know, restore fairness to the political system.
So is I'm sorry, is the end of the year the deadline for this?
We will probably collect some signatures after that, but to be on the safe side and get on the 2018 ballot, we want to hit that 1 million mark sometime before Christmas.
Okay. So the petition's available online. That's something people can find?
That's correct. All you have to do is to go to the website for the Floridians for a Fair Democracy and hit sign the petition, and it will come right up. You can print it off, and you can send it in.
Okay. So we're discussing Florida's policy for banning convicted felons from voting, even after they've completed their sentences and for the rest of their lives. Florida is just one of four states in the U.S., soon to be only three, with such a policy. What are your thoughts on this issue? We'd love to hear from you. Join our conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So currently, all people that are convicted of felonies must petition the state for clemency in order to have their voting rights restored. How does that process work?
Well, you have to actually submit a petition for clemency to the Board of Executive Clemency. It's reviewed by a state agency, but you can't submit that petition until 5 years after you've completed your sentence, or in the case of more serious crimes, 7 years after you've completed your sentence. Then it goes to, supposed to go to the Board of Executive Clemency, which is the governor and his cabinet. They meet four times a year, and under the Scott administration, they've basically restored the rights of 2,800 plus of you during the 6 years of the Scott administration. That compares to about 155,000 that were restored during the Crist administration of 4 years. So by the system that we have now, rights restoration becomes a political football. Whoever is in control of the state and the governor and the cabinet basically gets to establish their own rules. And that's basically unfair.
Just kind of by moving slowly, it seems like, processing these people. And then there's also another rule that was adopted in 2011 by the Scott administration that says that former felons must now wait 5 to 7 years after they complete their sentences to even apply for that restoration of voting rights, depending on their crime.
That's correct.
So they're put on a waiting list to then have their cases reviewed by the Florida Board of Executive Clemency. As you mentioned, it consists of the governor and three cabinet members, and the board meets four times a year, usually for one day. So how often does it usually take for people to get their cases even heard?
Well, there are backlogs of thousands of cases that we know of, and the difficulty is that how many cases can you actually hear and consider in a day? In 6 years of the governor, Scott, that's roughly 24 times they've met, and they've restored 2,800, so I guess you could say they might get 100 plus a few at a time. That means that to restore, you know, to cut the backlog of about 1.6 million people who are who have had their rights taken away from them, you could not imagine accomplishing that anywhere in this century.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining the show, we are talking with Colonel Feniger. He is a retired colonel. He's with the Director of Intelligence Special Operations Command at MacDill Air Force Base. He recently penned an op-ed about convicted felons and their voting rights and how that deals with veterans of our armed services. Do you have any feelings or thoughts about this? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. We'd love to hear from you. So in recent years, the Florida Supreme Court's responded by encouraging the creation of special veterans courts to help vets who've committed nonviolent crimes like drug offenses to avoid prison. How successful have these courts been, and how often does that result in a lesser sentence that does not end up being something that's a felony that would interfere with voting rights?
Well, that's a recognition that this Florida Supreme Court made several years ago, and they have encouraged the formation of veterans courts. And these things have functioned extremely well. What they are is basically diversionary programs that help people who complete the terms of the requirement, usually some kind of public service, training, education, drug counseling, things of that kind. And if they complete that, they basically don't have a felony conviction. It can be reinstated if they screw up, but if they don't have it. The problem is that doesn't cover anybody who had a conviction for a felony before these veterans courts were established. So the veterans courts are a good idea, and they help a lot of veterans who've had difficulty readjusting to civilian society, but they don't do anything for the people who've gotten in difficulty in the past, going all the way back to the Vietnam War period, and that really is a major problem.
Have you talked with or interacted much with many of these vets from back in the Vietnam era and maybe were convicted of felonies back in the late 70s? Have you talked with any of them about how they've been impacted by the lack of voting rights?
Well, I know a couple of people who have been impacted. The difficulty is, without voting rights, it's difficult to reintegrate into society. It's in our interest to go ahead and reintegrate these people, the veterans and others, into society, because if they get properly reintegrated into society, there is much lower probability that they'll reoffend. And that's one of the objectives of, you know, any good criminal system, is to have a system that encourages people not to reoffend once they've completed their sentence. And part of that is getting their civil liberties back. And that applies to veterans and everybody else.
Yeah, and I understand that this weekend it kind of makes sense to put the focus on veterans because it's Veterans Day weekend and things. But, I mean, as a blanket whole, what kind of a – it's kind of hard to speculate, but it's kind of a psychological question. But what kind of an impact does it have when you take away someone's ability to write? To vote. I think that would – maybe be a little bit tougher even for veterans because, as you mentioned earlier, that's what they're fighting for.
Well, they're fighting for the right to vote for everybody, the constitutional right to vote for everybody. And the problem that you run into is that sometimes it's difficult for veterans to vote. When we learned in the 2000 election that a lot of times absentee ballots from overseas weren't even counted if they didn't arrive in time and if the election was settled. I found that out, and I was outraged because in 30 years in the military, I managed to vote every year, including the times when I was in the Middle East, including times from several tours in Vietnam, one in Korea, and other times. And I thought voting was an absolute duty and went through considerable effort to make sure that it happened and also tried to encourage all the people that worked with me and for me to do the same thing. So when you lose the right to vote, or when you can't vote, it's a very serious issue because we're all subject to the people who get elected and to the laws and constitutional amendments that we pass.
Does it surprise you that this isn't more of a federal issue?
The difficulty is that the Constitution pretty much leaves it up to states, except for the Civil Rights Act of 1963, which prohibits certain kinds of discrimination based on the 14th Amendment. But initially, The states determined who got to vote, who they determined when the elections were. Sometimes it took us a long time even to directly elect senators. So the Constitution, basically a federal constitution, is not necessarily our answer, although there is a case before the Supreme Court now that might decide this entire issue. But it's a very difficult thing to do. The safest way is for the people of Florida to take the process out of the hands of whoever happens to be the governor and the cabinet and make it automatic. If someone goes back and screws up again, they'll lose their rights then. But until once they've completed the terms of their sentence, they ought to be able to vote automatically. And that's what this amendment does, except for murderers and felony sex offenders.
So, and I wanted to ask also, and I know it's hard to generalize, but what kind of crimes are we talking about that are felonies that are not murder and not felony sex offenders? Are we talking about mainly drug convictions?
Well, you can talk about drug convictions. You can talk about robbery. You can talk about burglary. You can talk about all kinds of things. But there are a whole bunch of silly kinds of things that turn out to be felonies that people commit. I don't have a list of them here, but somebody did. But the issue is not what kind of a felony you committed. The issue is that once you've been adjudicated and once you've completed your sentence, why all of a sudden has the state accepted the idea that they can impose an additional sentence on people after they've completed whatever terms of imprisonment or repayment or probation that have been imposed that will last typically for a huge long time until the governor and the cabinet get around to processing your request for clemency.
And you have to take the initiative to make that request, you know? So
if you do.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So how do you think Florida voters are going to respond to this kind of an amendment if it does make it on the ballot next November?
We think that Florida voters are basically fair-minded. It's really kind of an interesting thing. When you begin to look at it, there are plenty of places in the Bible, for example, where Jesus warns that God is not going to forgive those who will not forgive others. That's in the Gospel of Matthew. In Matthew also, Peter asks, how often should he forgive his brother who sinned against him, and asks whether he should do it 7 times, and Jesus responds that he should forgive him 77 times. And in many cases, what we're doing basically is not forgiving in this case. What we're doing is recommending and giving these people a second chance. And there are lots of people in the Bible who got second, third, and even fourth chances. So I think Floridians are fair-minded, and they'll look at the system and they'll say, this is a system that does not operate fairly. It operates on the whims of whoever happens to be the governor and happens to be in the cabinet. And to basically take this thing out of politics and make it automatic.
Are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us about this petition and the ACLU and its efforts to get this on the ballot?
Well, the ACLU is basically a defender of the Bill of Rights. I've been an ACLU member off and on since I was an undergraduate, longer ago than I care to think about. But basically what we look at is the rights of individuals. And one of the key rights in this society is the right to vote. It's been a plaything throughout our history where politicians basically tried to manipulate voting rights in different ways. And that's not the way we should function in this country. If someone gets in trouble and they make a mistake in their lives and they pay their debt to society, they should automatically have their rights restored. And that's what this amendment is going to do. With the exception of felony sex offenders and murderers, they'll have to go through a more rigorous process. But that's the American way. Second chances are endemic to what we do. We've given all kinds of people second chances, and we ought to do that for the people who've completed their sentences as well.
And when people go to the website that you mentioned earlier, are they going to see the final writing of how the ballot initiative will, how the amendment would go on the ballot?
They will see the exact amendment, and it will show them exactly what it says, except as provided in this subsection. Any disqualification of voting arising from a felony conviction shall terminate, and voting rights shall be restored upon completion of all terms of sentence, including parole or probation. But no person convicted of a murder or felony sex offense shall be qualified to vote until restoration of civil rights. And that language is right there. People can check it out for themselves. If people are circulating false claims about what this is or what it means, it's right on the amendment so they can see it.
Okay, and can you give me that website just one more time in case anybody missed it?
Yes, it's, the website is Floridians for a Fair Democracy. It will say sign the petition. You click on that button. The petition will come up. You can download it, print it, fill it out. When you fill it out, remember that your name has to be as it is on your voter registration card, has to have your address as it's listed with the supervisor of elections. Then it either has to have your voter registration number or your date of birth. And then you have to sign, date it and sign it. And you should sign it like you signed your voter registration card when you applied to get the right to vote.
And you're currently at a little over 50% of your goal of 1 million signatures by the end of the year.
That's correct. And we're getting more all the time. We would like Floridians to just basically flood us with these petitions so we can get this thing on the ballot and take the basic rights of people out of the political system and make it automatic restoration.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. Retired Colonel Mike Fenninger was Director of Intelligence Special Operations Command at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. He joined us from his home in Tampa. Colonel Fenninger, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, by the way, I've been a lifelong Republican. I've been a Republican registered since 1960.
Okay. Yeah.
Which gives you a little old idea of how old I am at this point in time. But the fact of the matter is that this is not a party thing. This is an issue of basic fairness.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up, how safe do you feel when you're on a bike here in Florida? A new report from the League of American Bicyclists says the Sunshine State is getting better in many categories in terms of bikeability, yet we remain one of the deadliest states in the country for cyclists. We're joined by a longtime bicycle and pedestrian advocate to dig into that report after this break.